Well, there you are. And here it is, summer solstice, the first day of summer in the Northern Hemisphere, the longest day of the year. 14 hours and 18 minutes of sunshine where I live. And you are tuned in to Redemption's Table. I'm Robert Barge, your host. And we have a delightful conversation today about birds and bird beatitudes. I call them the birditudes, with Pastor Courtney Ellis. Courtney has written a wonderful new book entitled Looking Up, A Birder's Guide to Hope Through Grief. She also hosts my favorite newly discovered podcast, The Thing with Feathers, conversations about birds and hope. This episode is so much fun. And to get us winging in the right direction, here's singer-songwriter J.J. Heller singing Songbird. It's a love song, but I believe every great love song is one we could either sing to Jesus or hear Him singing over us. Songbird qualifies. J.J. Heller with background vocals by Taylor Lenhart.
Straight-laced, want everything to have its place. I like to know what to expect, get all my little boxes checked. Oh, but there you go again, crashing through my best laid plans. Sometimes a bit of crazy, it's exactly what I need. You are the songbird singing in a coal mine. You're the neon rainbow in a sky of gray. And when the storm thunders and the clouds open up wide, honey, you're the madman dancing in the rain. Waking up to more bad news, reminding me what I could lose. The headlines have me turned around, but nothing seems to weigh it down. It's not that you ignore the bad, it's not that nothing makes you sad. It's just you hear the music everywhere you go. You are the songbird
Welcome, Courtney Ellis. It is a joy to have you at Redemption's Table.
Thank you for having me, Robert. I'm really happy to be here.
I've got to say, often I'm excited about a conversation because it's a conversation for the podcast. This time, I'm just excited about the conversation, whether we were doing this for a podcast or not. I didn't sleep as well last night. I think just kind of just hummingbirds, not butterflies, hummingbirds. So
I like it.
Well, you're a pastor. You are an author. You are a bird enthusiast. You're a podcaster. And I've discovered all of that within the last 45 days. You appeared on the Habit podcast with Jonathan Rogers. I heard that podcast. I already had my four books selected for the month of May. One of them got pulled. Your book got inserted. And wow, I love your book, Looking Up. We're going to talk about that. I love your podcast. Been listening every time, and I'm glad this summer you're doing it every other week so I can go back and catch up. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I hope I don't think I unpacked all of that just in the introduction.
Yeah, I'm the mother of three kids. They are 5, 8, and 11. So my husband and I are raising some young birders, some young readers, and they're on summer vacation right now. So we are all kind of flying by the seat of our pants. My husband and I feel like they're the baton. We just, you know, you hand the baton to the other parent and then you go to the church meeting, or you hand the baton and then you go grocery shopping. And it is a charmed and blessed and very full life this summer. So we live here in Southern California. We're in Orange County, Mission Viejo, but I am originally from the North Woods of Wisconsin. So I feel a little bit like I'm on vacation and eventually they'll send me back.
Wow. Those are two beautiful places. I've not been to Wisconsin. I've seen photos. I have been to Southern California.
For sure. For sure. And they're almost incomparable. They're so different. And one of the things I miss, I think, about Wisconsin is that the beauty there is so rich, but it's also a little more subtle. You have to look for it. You have to be open to it. Whereas California just smacks you in the face with beauty. You know, California is made for Instagram, and Wisconsin is made for deep hikes into the woods and a long afternoon on the lake and appreciating the different types of falling snow. So I do very much miss Wisconsin, and I'm grateful for our life here.
Yeah. Well, the way you just described that, I think I would opt for Wisconsin, deep walks in the woods, all of that. Not to take away from Southern California. You have a brand new book, Looking Up, subtitled A Birder's Guide to Hope Through Grief. For somebody who doesn't know about the book, what would you tell them?
Oh, goodness. That's always the tricky thing as an author is, how do you make an elevator pitch over something you gave 2 years of your life to? You know, sum it up. To sum it up, I would say it's a book primarily about how nature turns us toward hope. How the love of God is written throughout the book of creation. And the thread that's woven through the book is the story of saying goodbye and then the death of my grandfather and the way he got me into birding. And the book is structured so that every chapter is about a big life subject, big things like death and love and hope, but also a particular kind or family of birds. So we cover pelicans and we cover corvids and we cover wrens. And each of these birds is also a way to learn about this deeper truth, love or death or hope or partnership, things like that, in the ways that God has illuminated some of these things for me through the natural world.
Well, it's beautifully done. I mean, it's so well written. It would be great for someone to pick up who is interested in birds or someone who is going through a season of grief. I mean, it's just beautiful because you're writing out of your own experience, both with your enthusiasm for birds, but also walking through that season with the loss of your grandfather. I just want to read. Let me look it up real quick. I'm going to share my favorite quote in the book. You write, "The ridiculous idea occurred to me." And I just want to pause right there and say, I don't think it's a ridiculous idea. "The ridiculous idea occurred to me that perhaps taking delight in the Lord was less about sitting still with an open Bible, trying to will myself into a joyful feeling, and more about drinking deeply of the delights God plants over every square inch of the world. I'd been attempting to force delight, and all the while, God was sending warblers past my window." Wow, I love that.
Thank you. It has been one of the deepest joys for me in birding is that it is this bottomless bowl of delight that there are always new birds. There's always more to learn. There's always, even if it's the same house finches showing up in my yard day after day, they're doing new things. They were feeding their fledglings yesterday. They were all sitting up there on our string lights, and those fledglings that are almost as big as the adults are just feed me. You know, it's, it is such a joy to discover in this season of midlife. I'm 41 years old, this season of midlife, that I don't have to try hard for joy, that God has set it before me. And my job is to go out with open eyes and an open heart and keep looking up.
Have you ever done a list of all the birds you've seen in your lifetime before you started recording?
No, I haven't. I've been keeping a life list for the past 4 years or so, but I haven't thought about the birds I've seen before then. I feel like I have to start counting from when I've officially started counting, but I love that idea.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, how many birds did I miss, or I saw them, didn't register because I've lived in other parts of the country other than where I'm living now. And yeah, so talk about spark birds a minute. Yours is the Black Phoebe.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So a spark bird is the first bird that grabs your attention. And you may have seen birds your whole life, you may have noticed, but it's that first bird that sparks a real interest in you. Oh, what is that bird? I want to know that bird's name. I want to learn more about that bird. It's kind of the bird that gets you into birding for the first time. So my spark bird is a Black Phoebe. They're only west of the Rockies. We have them out here in the East Coast. You have Eastern Phoebes, but they're beautiful little birds. They look like they're wearing a tuxedo. They've got a white front and a black cap and a black back and a black tail. And they're flycatchers. So what they do is they perch on things. They perch on, you know, the tops of dead trees and snags, or they perch on the fence at the playground, or they perch on the string lights in our backyard, and they fly off their perch to grab a bug in midair, and then they return to their perch to eat it. So they're just jaunty, delightful little birds. And a friend was visiting our home. This was right before COVID started. And she looked out the window and she said, "Oh, you have a Phoebe." And I said, "I have a what now?" And she pointed it out to me. And I thought, gosh, we've been living in this house for a few years. I'm sure this is not the first time that bird has showed up in my yard, and I've never noticed before. What else am I missing? And thus began my birding journey.
Yeah. I was surprised this morning. Again, I picked up my field notes, is where I'm keeping a list of birds. In 2023, last year, last spring, I saw a Black Phoebe in Yosemite. And I recorded it, and I was like, "Oh, that's Courtney's bird." So that's pretty awesome. You also talk about a bird from the Lord, which I love that idea. I love that concept. You introduced it as something to observe during the season of Lent, but I'm like, I don't want to wait till next February, but I will be doing it then. Tell us a little bit about a bird from the Lord.
So I have to give credit where credit is due. This phrase comes from my friend Paul Wallace, who's a professor at Agnes Scott College. He lives in Georgia. And he would often post on Twitter, which we still call it Twitter because it's the birdiest of the social medias. It's X now, but we're going to call it Twitter. And he would say, "I went out looking for birds and I prayed for a bird from the Lord. And God sent me 6 grackles and 7 fish crows." And, you know, and I was just so taken with this phrase. And I said, "Hey, Paul, could I borrow it? I would love to start a Lenten practice for folks where I invite them to go outside or sit near a window for 10 minutes and look for birds and just see what happens in your heart, what happens in your body, what happens in your soul, what birds do God send, what birds are sent to you by God." And there's kind of this developing understanding when you sit and look for birds that every bird is a gift. Every bird is a grace. So I led this practice on social media. Paul led it for me on Friday. Fridays, I'm offline. It's my Sabbath. The church makes me work Sundays, believe it or not. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So he would lead it on Fridays. And we developed this really sweet ecumenical community around it. We had Presbyterians and Lutherans and Methodists. We had a rabbi who joined in. We had folks who were spiritual but not religious and said, "Birds are my church." And together, we would look for birds and then share what we saw, descriptions or photos. And this wonderful community grew up. So this past Lent, I think, was our third year of doing it. And it's become one of my favorite spiritual practices. And it doesn't have to be. I do it all the time anyway, but I lead it intentionally for others during the season of Lent. And what folks have said is, even if they weren't birders before, there's something so beautiful about a spiritual practice where you are actively waiting. Your eyes are open, your ears are open, your heart is open. And folks have told me, even when I don't see a bird, I can sense that God is settling me down, that God is speaking peace to my soul. And then I get delightful texts, like a friend from my church who said, I saw a crow eating a Del Taco wrapper. What does that mean? So, well, it's not like a one-to-one correlation of meaning, but, you know, did you enjoy the show? And he said, absolutely. So that is hashtag a bird from the Lord.
That's great. What's your last bird from the Lord?
I was at the playground with my kids a couple of days ago, and just above that playground is a botanic garden. So I looked over at my husband, and he kind of knows the look of Courtney wants to go look for birds. And he gave me the nod, like, go ahead, take a walk. And my oldest son went with me. And it's so fun because he's 11 years old. So he has great vision. He has great hearing, you know, oh, to be young again. And his favorite birds right now are spotted towhees that make this little sound. And so we walked. And as we walked, he would say, I hear a spotted towhee. Now I hear a new one. We're farther down the trail. And he was pointing them out to me. And it was just so delightful to connect both with the birds on the hillside, but also with my son, who's becoming a little bit of a birder.
Wow. I'm amazed you just trilled your R's so well there. That was, I can't. So
I'm trying to learn Spanish. So it's good. It's good for practice.
It's very good. Yeah. Do you know a lot of bird calls?
I don't. I'm a big fan of the Merlin Bird ID app. Okay. If your listeners don't know about it, it's a great app for learning bird sounds and bird calls and identifying birds. It's totally free. It's from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. But my daughter, my five-year-old, our only girl, is a big fan of the mimicry, and she tries to get the birds to talk back to her. So she can do a really good mourning dove, and she can do a really good American crow.
I love mourning doves. There's one around my house all the time. And interestingly enough, it was the Merlin app that pulled me in again recently. I was sitting at my table, quiet time with the Lord, and I heard a bird outside. And I thought to myself, I wonder what bird that is. And then I thought, I wonder if somebody's made an app that picks up bird sounds. I thought, well, surely by now somebody's developed that. And lo and behold, there it was. So I hit the button, recorded it before I even opened the blinds to look, and it said Carolina Wren. So I go and open my blinds, and the little Carolina Wren was sitting there on the rail of my back porch. And I was like, that is so cool. So that was kind of my introduction. But there's a bird that I've been trying to figure out what the bird is. I heard it in Glacier National Park in 2019. And I remember the call of the bird. I gave the call words so I could remember it. And it goes like this. Probably this probably won't make the podcast. I don't know. but it's, hey, hey, pretty, pretty, pretty. Hey, hey, pretty, pretty, pretty.
Interesting.
Ring any bells?
It doesn't, but there are a lot of different birds up in Montana that we don't have down here. So, yeah. But I wish you well in your quest. When you figure it out, I want an email. I want to know.
I will. Yeah. I will do that, because in anticipation of the trip and even afterward, I went back through. There was like two or three or maybe four CDs of birds in that region. And I listened to the whole thing, every single one of them, all the way through, listening for that call. And I couldn't quite find it. So. How often do you preach? Your pastor, do you preach every Sunday, or are you where there's a rotating group?
Yes, I'm on a pastoral staff. My husband is also a pastor at this church, so pray for our kids. They get a lot of church time. So my husband is also on staff, and then we have a senior pastor, Jackson. So normally I preach once a month. Right now Jackson is away traveling, so I'm preaching twice a month. And it's really wonderful. I was a solo pastor at a rural Wisconsin church before I came out here, and I preached probably 44, 45 Sundays in a year. And it was beautiful. It was a wonderful way to get to know the congregation, have them get to know me and walk with the Lord together. But one of the benefits of being on a teaching team is I also get preached to, which we all need, you know? So the opportunity to hear the story of David and Goliath through Jackson's voice, and then to hear this week, my husband Daryl is preaching on the anointing of David, the call of David, is such a gift. And I think I write better sermons when I'm writing one or two a month rather than three or four a month. You need a little time to gather your resources and have it kind of percolate in you. It's almost like a mini version of writing a book, where even when you're not actively working on it, it's working on you. You know, I've been sitting in 1 Samuel 17 for about 2.5 weeks now, and I'm just starting to get to the point where I know what God wants me to pull out of it.
Yeah. You have my dream job. I had that idea of a rotating team of pastors 35, 40 years ago. And I always said that would be so wonderful. And lo and behold, now a lot of churches are doing that. So I think that's pretty cool. How often do birds pop up in your sermon?
More often than they probably should. And sometimes I go into my prep and I say no birds this time. And then there's a bird in the text and I have to talk about it, you know, rise up on wings like eagles. Okay, well, we have to talk about what that means. Or Jesus saying, look at the ravens. Now we have to talk about what that means. So even despite my best efforts, there are just so many birds in scripture and so many birding metaphors that they wing their way in. But I'm finding as a pastor, it is such a wonderful way to connect with the congregation. Probably a third of the emails in my box right now are, what is this bird? Or I saw this in my yard. Or, you know, birds are the great unifier in a world that divides us over so many different things, politics and religion and our opinions and our perspectives. We can all stand and look up at the tree and notice that there's something beautiful up there. And for a moment, we're all looking in the same direction. And I think that's a fantastic aspect of birding.
Yeah. When I invited you to the podcast, I love the Beatitudes. I've been working on a Beatitude book. I've been teaching the Beatitudes for 20 years, but I'm working on a book right now. And, you know, I thought that would be so fun to have a conversation with you about the Birditudes. Jesus mentions the birds in the Sermon on the Mount, his Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6, you know, look up at the birds. But the Beatitudes is how it all begins, this beautiful, rich exclamations. But he talks about the different, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the mourners. And I want to go through each one of those and just see, because I think you are further along than I on the bird enthusiast part. And I think you probably could match quicker with more knowledge than I could. Which bird is the most poor in spirit?
Oh, I like this. This is a fun challenge. Which bird is the most poor in spirit? You know, my very, very favorite bird, and I write about this in the book, is the song sparrow. And I think there's a case to be made for a sparrow of some type being poor in spirit. They're small, they're brownish, they're not that much to look at. But Jesus really values them. And Jesus will say, you know, are two sparrows sold for a penny? Are you not of more worth than they? And I love that Jesus doesn't say, the sparrows don't matter, but you matter. He says, the sparrows matter to God, and you matter so much more.
Yeah, I love that. The next one, which bird is the most like, blessed are the mourners? This might be an easy one. I don't know. But
I think I know where we're going with this one. my daughter is still convinced it's morning, like AM, PM, morning dove. But in fact, it is MOURN. And doves are so fascinating because they're symbols of peace. And we see that in scripture. We see that, you know, the Holy Spirit descends like a dove on Jesus. But the more you learn about doves, the more you learn that they're just not that bright. They have these big bodies and these tiny heads and these tiny brains. They build terrible nests. Their nests are often so badly built that the eggs will fall through the bottom, or the nestlings will fall through the bottom. And then they just kind of look at it for a minute and they build a new nest and they lay more eggs. They're just, you know, but I think for those reasons, we can find ourselves in the doves. You know, we too sometimes are not as good at our craft as we need to be. We too sometimes do half a job when a full job is required. And yet God cares for them. God is present to them. So we'll go with the morning doves for the morning.
All right. And that's where I thought you probably would go. I agree. It's funny, those birds have been following me for the last 30 years, I think. We used to live in the Davis Mountains in West Texas, and there the climate was so wonderful. You could leave your doors open all the time overnight, and in the morning, I would hear the morning dove. And now I have one that's been outside my house here for the last 5 or 6 years here in Alabama. So, blessed are the meek.
Blessed are the meek. So there's a bird that I've heard many times, but I've never seen. They're very, very, very shy. And even professional bird photographers will say to get a picture of this bird is incredibly tricky. They live around marshes, but the bird is called a Virginia rail. And we have them even here in Southern California. They're big. They're kind of marshy shorebirds. They have really big feet. They're kind of quail shaped. but I would go with the Virginia rail. That it is a very, very meek bird.
Wow. I love it. Blessed are the those who hunger and thirst, those the voracious birds. What would you pick?
I would go with the American crow for those. They will eat anything. That our youngest daughter is just graduating from out here in California. We call it TK, but it's a pre-K program. So she'll go to kindergarten next year. So all year I would pick her up at TK, and then we go pick her brothers up at their elementary school. And as all these elementary school kids are pouring out of the school, you can see the treetops above are filled with crows, and they're waiting for that playground to be empty. And as soon as it is, they descend and they are flying away with Cheetos and chip bags. And, you know, they are just, they're the cleanup crew. They're the janitors. They thrive so well in urban and suburban environments because they're incredibly adaptable and their systems are tough enough to eat almost anything.
Yeah, Taco Bell wrappers. I mean,
for sure.
You said something in the book that there are more crows than there are sparrows, and that blew my mind.
Yeah.
That's like four times as many.
Crows, we talk a lot about population decline and conservation in birding circles, but crows are doing just fine. Yeah. Crows are going to be okay. Crows are going to survive the apocalypse for sure.
Blessed are the merciful. Who are the merciful birds out there?
Blessed are the merciful. So one of the things I love about our backyard house finches, we've kind of gotten to know them over the years. They've been fairly constant is, and I read about this in the book. I read about finches in the chapter on partnership. No. In the chapter on dailiness, what it is to keep showing up to the same tasks of parenting, of pastoring, of being a faithful Christian in a world that can sometimes be rough seas. And what I see with our house finches is they stick together and they care for one another. I'm watching them raise their babies right now, but I'm also watching these mated pairs care for each other. They get to the feeder and who gets to eat first? And some birds will fight to the death over this. Blue jays, the answer to that question with blue jays is whichever blue jay got there first and is biggest and strongest. But that's not usually how our house finches behave. They will wait a holy wing beat or two so their mate can eat their fill. And I think there's something really beautiful to that. They're not the flashiest birds. They're not the most beautiful. They're not the loudest. But they're very faithful to one another.
Wow. I love what you just said. A holy wing beat or two. That's wow. Blessed are the pure in heart. And I'm kind of connected to, I agree with Soren Kierkegaard, the Danish philosopher, when he said to be pure in heart is to will one will. And I look at that and think, you live specifically. That's what Jesus was getting at. You may have a different take, but who are the pure in heart birds?
I'm really taken right now. So I live here in Southern California. We're, 10 miles or so from the coast. And we are in tern migration season. So T-E-R-N, tern. And we get royal terns, we get Caspian terns, we get elegant terns. Occasionally we'll get leased terns. And they are these incredibly aerodynamic birds. They are just built to a point so that they can circumnavigate the globe. They go from pole to pole in a given year. They are world travelers. They fly thousands of miles over areas where there is no land, there is no rest. And I'm just so fascinated with their tenacity and their perseverance and their longevity. But it's so funny. We'll go and visit them. One of my favorite birding spots here is the Bolsa Chica Marsh. And I'll go up there to the wetlands, and these birds have this incredibly shrill call because they have to be heard over hurricane force winds. They have to be able to find each other over stormy seas. But when they're in suburban California, the racket that they make is just astonishing. So I'm very taken with terns right now. I think terns can fit the bill because to get that far, to migrate those distances, you have to have a very clear sense of purpose and a very clear will.
I like that. What popped in my mind, I'm always thinking in puns. The Byrds were a group from the 60s and they had that song, Turn, 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 Different Turn.
Yes. Yes.
Let's turn to the next bird. Blessed are the peacemakers.
Blessed are the peacemakers. So there are as many different kinds of birds as there are people. There are an estimated 11,000 different species of birds in the world, and they all have to get food, and they all have to find mates, and they all need to find shelter and build nests. And so a lot of birds are very territorial. They're very, get out of my way. Hummingbirds, especially, kind of the smaller the bird, the more territorial it is, and the feistier they have to be. But when I think about a bird that is peaceful, I think about the California quail. So they look like they're just these pear-shaped, sweet little birds. They show up in a lot of Disney movies because they're so cute. They have that plume on their heads. But what they do, and what I so appreciate about them as a parent, is they live communally. So they will take care of each other's nestlings, and they will watch over each other's broods, and they'll set a watch. It's usually a male that'll sit up on a fence post or midway up in a tree. They don't fly well. They don't go up high, but they'll sit up as high as they can get and kind of survey the area for predators. And when they see something, they sound the alarm and they all get down and they all scurry off to whatever underbrush they can hide in. But they really do, they don't pick fights. They're very peaceful, gentle birds that are much more concerned with their own self-defense and self-preservation than they are with bullying anyone around them.
We could use more California quails in our country right now, couldn't we?
Right.
The final one, blessed are the persecuted. Mm.
Who are the persecuted birds? Yeah. So I did a lot of research for this book about migration, and I'm starting work on another book that's going to have a whole chapter on migration, which I'm really excited about. But one of the things we're learning is that migratory birds get pushed to the very, very edge of what is physically possible. They have to walk this balance between eating enough so they have enough energy for the journey and eating too much, which would weigh them down. So it's really this precision art with birds. And when they're flying these long distances, they become exhausted, they become disoriented. And what we're seeing is an increase year on year in window strikes. There was famously last spring of 2023, a building in Chicago where school kids were stepping over just heaps of dead warblers that hit the windows of these high, high buildings. And so I think rather than a specific kind of bird, I would talk about migratory birds as a whole. And we're not actively persecuting them. You know, rare is the person who's out there with a shotgun trying to take down warblers. But because of our space encroaching on their space, and because of these big, beautiful buildings we're building with these big, beautiful windows, we're creating a really hostile environment for them. And so we're learning there are really simple things we can do. We can turn off our lights, our outdoor lights, in migratory season. That helps the birds become less disoriented because most songbirds migrate at night. They use celestial navigation. It's cooler. There are fewer predators, so they fly all night. So when we turn off the lights, it helps them. When we add decals and things to our windows so they don't smack into our windows, that helps them. There are a lot of tall buildings in Chicago and major cities that are adding this bird-friendly glass. So I think a lot as a Christian about what it means to be a steward of the earth and what it means to first do no harm and to care for these creatures that God has given to us and entrusted to us. So I'd go with migratory birds as a whole, except the terns. They migrate out at sea. They're fine. They're not smacking into anything, but the warblers especially.
Wow, that was wonderful. Some of these birds that I see that you mentioned, morning dove, I'm going to not look at them the same way again, just kind of a different perspective there. So thanks for that. That's so good.
That was a fun exercise.
Yeah, it was. And you did a beautiful job. That's really good. I would be stumbling on some of them because I'm not the bird enthusiast. I'm not quite there yet, getting there. So you asked the question about hope in your podcast, the thing with feathers. I love it. I highly recommend those who are listening to go check it out, to listen. Redemption's Table, the theme is redemption. And I'm always encouraging awareness of redemptive moments. Some are so subtle, we might not readily see them. Kind of like birds, kind of like the ones you say you were having a hard time finding. Have you had any redemptive moments lately that have just kind of God's way of sneaking up on you, just kind of catching you, catching your breath?
I love that question. I love that the story of faith is a story of redemption and constant redemption and renewal and rebirth and regrowth and transformation and hope. And I can think of so many moments. Our I always struggle a little bit with summer as a working parent. The kids are out of school and they have tons of free time, but I still have the same weight of responsibilities at church as I always do. And so in the past, I've really white knuckled it and just nose to the grindstone. We're going to get through it. You know, I'm going to get my work done and you're going to get your chores done. And here we go. And Daryl, my husband, really encouraged me as we headed into this summer. He said, Courtney, what would it look like this summer if you tried a little bit less hard? And I said, well, what does that mean? You know, I'm a go-getter and I'm an overachiever. And if it's due on Friday, I'll get it to you by Thursday noon. And he said, yeah, but I don't know that that's healthy for you. I don't know that that's healthy for the family. What would it look like to accept that summer is a slower rhythm, that's the invitation from God? That's the invitation from our church. Half of our church is in Europe right now. I brought a big box of donuts to the staff meeting and I said, well, we're all not in Europe, but here's our consolation prize. let's all have some good donuts. And realizing that the heart of the gospel is not Jesus coming to us and saying, try harder. But the heart of the gospel is Jesus coming to us and saying, draw close to me. And when we do, we discover that sometimes what Jesus is saying to us is rest. What sometimes Jesus is saying to us is go for a walk. What sometimes Jesus is saying to us is put a pin in it. It will still be there tomorrow. It's okay to leave some dishes undone. It's okay to set that project aside for a moment. It's okay to realize half your church is in Europe. So maybe you don't have to run at 1,000 miles an hour because they don't expect you to. And that lesson is a long time in coming to me, but already we're, you know, just a few weeks into the summer, I'm seeing it bear such beautiful fruit. Normally my daughter says, read me a book, mommy. And I say, oh, I've got to get X, Y, and Z ready. And I feel that press of the Holy Spirit saying, read her a book, read her a book. Yeah. And there is grace in the resting and there's grace in a slower pace. And accepting that as a gift from the Lord and not as a failure, not as, you know, a flaw, is such a delight. So there's been a lot of redemption there for me. Yeah.
That's great. That's beautiful. Well, we could keep going. I'm just so grateful for your meeting me here at the table. This has been a good conversation. When's your new book coming out?
I haven't even signed a contract on it yet, but it's percolating. So probably 2026.
Okay. I like that. I'm glad to hear that. I'll be looking for it. So
thank you.
Yeah. All right. And I will, for those who want to follow you and know a little bit more about you, where can they go? What website? What? Give them some information.
For sure. My website is Courtney B. Ellis, Courtney B as in boy Ellis. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, Courtney Ellis. I'm on Facebook and my Substack is Courtney Ellis as well. And I send out a monthly newsletter called Keep Looking Up. My podcast is The Thing with Feathers. And you can find the book, Looking Up, A Birder's Guide to Hope Through Grief, anywhere books are sold. So you can get it on Amazon. You can request it at your local independent bookstore. There's a great new independent bookstore in Pennsylvania that I love to support, even though I live out here, called Nooks, run by some fellow writers, Sean Smucker and Miley Silva. You can request it there and they would love to send it to you.
All right. Well, I highly recommend those who are listening to go check out Courtney and go get that book. And go discover some things. It's absolutely amazing. Thank you so, so much. I'm going to let them go, but, you know, we can linger just another moment. But just thank you for coming to Redemption's Table today. You said Courtney B. Ellis, B as in boy. I figured you'd say B as in bird.
That's what I should do. I'm going to change that from here on out. B as in bird.
Well, thanks, Courtney. You have a blessed morning there in Southern California.
Thank you so much for having me. What a treat.
Yes.
Some might call it foolish. Others call it faith. Truth is, I wish I could live a little more that way. Like a song.